extraordinary wonderment of the Pint of Science Festival continues ever onwards, and we're delighted now to have not one, but two superb individuals actually joining us. First of all, the, I will say, legendary Barry Turner. How are you, Barry?
I'm fine, thanks.
From, of course, the School of English and Journalism, from this perspective, and obviously, aside to you, I wasn't aware of, but you do specialise very much in some of the legal aspects of some of these science developments that we're talking about in the festival.
And the scientific aspects of them.
Exactly, which is great. We'll find out more about that in a few seconds. We've also got, originally from Italy, but at the University of Lincoln School of Chemistry, of course, it's Andrea Floris. How are you, Andrea?
Fine, thank you.
Excellent. Barry, if we can come to you, because you are going to be co-presenting at the same venue as Alina Rodriguez, who we spoke to, obviously, in this little mini-series of Pint of Fire Festival, almost millilitres of festival, but whatever, audio pieces. Share with us what you're going to be presenting.
I'm giving a paper on the quality, or rather lack of it, of science reporting in the British media.
And that's such an important aspect for so many ways, because it feeds into the fake news aspect. It feeds into the laziness. I'm instantly reminded of the anti-vax campaign in America in terms of a news story which was proven to be palpably untrue a few years ago.
And has killed a significant number of people.
Exactly. So very significant aspects. Why did you actually follow that as an interest? It's been a passion of yourself for many a year now.
My particular area is medical. Area of interest is medical science, and the most impact of bad reporting is in the medical science field. Our newspapers, in particular, are full of utterly ludicrous nonsense. You know, the cancer stories. One day something will cure you, the next day it'll kill you, and the following day it'll cure you again. And the constant churning out of very, very poor quality reporting on medical science in particular.
I've constantly been banging the drum for saying that science is not necessarily difficult. It's another way of thinking, another way of viewing life and various other aspects. But you need to be open-minded and objective to those kind of things. What you've just been alluding to there, I think, within the mass media, is it a case of lazy writing, lazy journalism, people not checking their facts, people saying, OK, we'll go with this, and then before you know where you are, you've got mixtures from, yes, UFOs landing can cure cancer.
It's mainly a clash of philosophies. The media's immediate. It wants a story now. It wants it to be sensational. It wants it to have impact. And the bottom line is, science doesn't work like that. Science is incremental. We rarely see what the media would call breakthroughs. Media is obsessed with breakthrough stories, and breakthroughs rarely happen, particularly in medical science. Something like a new treatment for cancer will take years or decades to develop. It's not something that would be discovered in a lab in a university, and the following day it would be available for the public. But the press, of course, tend to give that impression, and they go for these high-impact stories and dramatise something which is of spectacular importance to us, but rarely dramatic.
There are, of course, good examples of science reporting. I think Scientific American, even dare I say, New Scientist, although it has been pointed out that certainly the sensational aspects of some of the New Scientist covers sometimes are kind of underpinned by the story, etc. But would you say that is at the high end of reporting? And when we talk about lazy science journalism, is that very much looking at the tabloids?
The tabloids, in fact, draw a lot of their information from sources like Scientific American, which I refer to as filters. We start with the science paper coming out of the research institute. The New Scientist will pick that up and journalize it, but it into a kind of science journalism rather than a general tabloid journalism. And what will happen then is it may go through a couple of other filters. It may be broadcast, and then it'll be picked up by the newspapers where it's turned into this product. But the New Scientist is rightly criticised. It's an excellent source of scientific information, but it is rightly criticised. It is biased. It's biased towards particular stories. And one of my main criticisms of it, personal criticisms, is it is utterly obsessed with the rather crazy end of theoretical physics.
Indeed. Well, yes, the notion that there are multiple universes and in similar cosmologies, we're having this conversation about a completely different aspect, etc. Interesting, because let's turn now to Andrea. I mean, I'm not so much a scientific connection, but I remember a wonderful writer called Primo Levi, who produced a book called The Periodic Table, in which he effectively sort of used the sort of elements of the periodic table to refer to his own life experiences and so on. But Andrea, we've been listening there to Barry's viewpoint for that. Does a similar thing occur in Italy, across Europe? I mean, do you often sort of pick up a scientific populist newspaper and say, this is just ridiculous?
Yeah, I would say that is a general problem. There are some very interesting topics, especially in physics, some obsessions, for example, about cosmology or about time traveling, or if there is life in the universe. And these are always very, very popular. But actually, there is much more. For example, in my field, which is condensed matter physics, or essentially solid-state chemistry. Mm. There are many things happening, and this is the world of quantum mechanics, and they are less popular because probably it's very difficult to convey the message to the public in these respects.
Is it a case of sometimes concepts such as you talk about the physical chemistry? I mean, I must admit, I always used to find organic chemistry interesting and fascinating from the point of view that there's a logic that worked through the whole thing in terms of the way that hydroxyls will work and carbon chemistry and so on and so forth. But it was actually the NMR work, physical chemistry, that really interested me from that perspective. So I have sympathy with the viewpoint that people say, well, actually, yes, using Carl Sagan's line that we are creatures that hydrogen atoms can evolve into given several billion years of evolution is quite an interesting, mind-blowing area. Share with us what you're going to be talking about as far as your own pint of science is going to be concerned.
I will be talking on superconductivity, which is a phenomenon that happens to any metal when the temperature is very low. So it's a phenomenon completely dictated by quantum mechanics, which is the theory that governs, if you want, all the aspect of the microscopic world. So I will be doing a talk and a lecture together. So I try to explain something in the half an hour that I will have. So not only just to point in sensational aspects of superconductivity.
I'll come back to that in a few seconds, but Barry, just returning to yourself. Now, that I find fascinating, I find it interesting, I find it exciting. I could see it being developed, etc. If we were sort of criticising, for instance, the New Scientist, would you say, yeah, well, they need to actually be much more objective and say this is going to take a lot of work? I'm really trying to address the issue of how do we inspire, but at the same time and use the imagination without necessarily saying, hey, it's also very difficult as well.
Well, we have to appreciate that journalism, and particularly magazine journalism like The New Scientist, is a product. And they're in the business of selling magazines. And they sell magazines.
I remember Omni from years ago.
Yes, but I read all of the science magazines. And they follow a similar format. Hmm. They're targeting a particular audience. And they do tend to go for sensationalist ideas, like whether there are multiple universes. One of the things that they irritates me particularly about that kind of science journalism is that it's completely irrelevant whether there are or not, because we aren't ever going to be going to them or seeing them or experiencing them in any way except in our own imaginations.
And I'll come back with the Arthur C. Clarke notion that anybody who says never can't is probably sort of a little bit out of the picture, but I mean, I'm paraphrasing obviously Arthur C. Clarke on that basis. But
well, I have a particular interest in physics myself, and I'm particularly interested in the fact that there are things known as laws of physics. Mm. This is where my background in law and science come together. Mm. These things are not immutable, but they are highly unlikely to be wrong after 350 years of the establishment of this school of physics.
Had it not been for Newton, we would not have landed on the moon.
Well, yes, but we're going from Isaac Newton to the present day. Mm. We've had 350 years or more of these things being tested over and over again, and we are yet to see any examples where the Newtonian physics might be wrong. It might be slightly inaccurate occasionally, but that's because of the era it was invented in. But no one has ever indicated that anything about it is wrong, not only here on Earth, but anywhere else in the visible universe, at least.
Let's return back to Andrea, because clearly Newton, Einstein, Planck, Hawking, or people who actually sort of had areas and issues and the notion that on the quantum level, that's the time where actually what we've taken for granted from Principia Mathematica, 350 years ago, as you said, onwards, that has proven to be fine. Is it a case of you have that interesting challenge and almost that tension, as Karl Popper would say, in terms of scientific paradigms and one shifting to another? Or is it a case of, within your own work, you are noticing areas where, well, actually, Barry, no, maybe Newton isn't right all the time?
Well, I mean, there was the evolution of the Newtonian physics in the Einstein physics with general relativity, which, let's say, corrected slightly the Newtonian physics, and then revolution, really, the Newtonian physics in terms of sort of geometrization of forces, for example. Also, quantum mechanics is also well established since the beginning of last century, but now there are still a lot of challenges, especially in condensed matter physics. I want to mention one related to superconductivity. In the field, there are several materials that superconduct at very high temperature, for which the theory is not yet known, essentially. So it's not clear the mechanism of, in terms of fundamental science, it's not science, it's not clear why these materials have these highly interesting properties of superconducting. And this is, for example, one of the most important challenges of physics now. And for sure, the person or the group of scientists that will come up with a theory that explains this class will get the Nobel Prize. Oh. This is the minimum that can happen. So there are many, many things that are challenging. And now also in 2D materials and 2D materials that also superconduct. And of course, all of this is in the kingdom of quantum mechanics.
I'm almost tempted to think in many ways, and there's so much we can actually talk about, sadly we are restricted for time, that we have Andrew, who's the pint of science half full in terms of, and Barry, maybe a slightly more pessimistic view in terms of the sort of elements of science reporting.
Perhaps I should be the one that's doing the talk at the pessimist gym. No, I'm not actually pessimistic. I'm critical, certainly. I'm critical of areas where I think science is being misrepresented. I'm particularly critical where it's being misrepresented for what I would call ulterior motives. But I think I would actually be more likely to be in the half full glass. I think there's plenty of room for scope for improvement, and we do see improvement. But that doesn't mean we should ever let up on the criticism. The reporting of science is incredibly important in terms of not only in keeping us informed about what's going on, but there are moral and ethical issues which come into it. For instance, as I mentioned, I teach a lot, in fact, on the presentation of medical science within the press and within the media. And we divide it into two areas where we are talking about constant scare stories on the one hand, and the opposite side of it being the false hope stories, both of which have serious ethical implications. Telling people, for instance, that there's been a giant breakthrough in cancer research, which is a frequent story, at least once a month, I would think, maybe even sometimes once a week, we will see giant breakthrough in cancer research. And it's never anything of the sort. It's usually a single study in a single university that's not been repeated. And even if it were, to use the term loosely, a breakthrough, it would be several years before that treatment was available for patients. So to give that kind of information, send that kind of information, gives out an unethical form of false hope. That's where I'm particularly critical, that's why I sometimes sound like a pessimist.
Well, it's been fascinating getting some general input from both of you. I mean, Andrea, unless you're going to turn around at the Pint of Science Festival and say, well, actually, my superconductivity research can actually cure cancer, I think we're okay, but who knows? It could be a whole new world. Find out details. Obviously, we're going to the Pint of Science Festival site. Can you just remind, if you know where you're performing, because I think, Barry, you're on Monday evening?
Monday evening at the Café Portico.
Café Portico. And Andrea?
Also Monday evening at the Pessimist, even if I am optimistic.
There we are, perfectly formed.